Generations later, so Volozhin was personified by these two people, by the Netziv and by Reb Chaim. And Volozhin grew to have 450 students. Now, under the rules of the Russian government, they only were allowed 250 students. So there always were 200 illegals. And when the Russian government would come to visit, so 200 guys had to lie under the bed somewhere, which was not always easy to do, to hide, because the whole town, I mean, you're not hiding 200 people in New York City. And so Volozhin existed by at the sufferance of the Russian government and by paying bribes to local officials. The great building of the yeshiva in Volozhin was built. It was burned down. It burned. It was rebuilt again. The Russian government, through the efforts of the Maskilim, put great pressure on Volozhin to teach Russian subjects. The Netziv and Reb Chaim came to an accommodation with the Russian government for a period of time, for almost 10 years, in which perfunctory classes in Russian subjects were taught outside the yeshiva on a private basis. And the yeshiva saw to it that certain students attended in rotation, etc., but it never intended to have Russian studies as part of its main curriculum. The Russian government, losing patience with the Jews generally, and again with the instigation of the Maskilim, finally lost patience with Volozhin. They finally realized that Volozhin was the factory that was producing the armament that was going to defeat Russia. Because as long as Volozhin kept on producing these types of people, these Jewish leaders, generation after generation, the Russian government, the Russian Orthodox Church, was not going to get in. And they finally realized it, and they decided to close the institution. And in 1892, the Russian government came, and they laid down their ultimatum that either the yeshiva conform to all the official standards, or they will close it. And they drove the students out of the yeshiva. They disbanded it. And the legend has it again that the Netziv himself put the lock on the door.
Rather than give in to the demands of the Russian government, and when people asked him, how could you do it, what's going to be now? So he says, you know, what's going to be, he says, is God's problem. I can only do what I'm supposed to do. Which is really the classic answer of a Jew. Most of us play God. We play God with our own personal lives, with our family's lives, with our children's lives. We play God with the Jewish people. We know exactly what the Jewish people, we know how to save the situation. We know what it needs. The Netziv said that let God play God. That's his problem, what's going to be, right? I'm going to be in yeshiva, so let him figure out how they're going to be in yeshiva. Right? That's not my problem. My problem is that I'm not going to let the Russians run the yeshiva. The Tsar is not the Russian yeshiva. And again, the Netziv was correct, because the closure of Volozhin opened up the seven or eight great Lithuanian yeshivas that scattered and became, in the late 1890s and in the 1900s, the fountainhead of knowledge and scholarship and traditional Judaism. But the closing of the yeshiva broke the heart of the Netziv and of Reb Chaim. Became ill from it, psychologically and physically ill. And when his father died, he took over and became the Rav of Brisk, but he never was the same person that he was in the yeshiva. The Netziv then decided that he would go there in Sisrael, but he never made it. He only made it as far as Warsaw, and in Warsaw he died. Again, of a broken heart, because he couldn't live without the yeshiva. Okay, we'll continue next time.